Hello again, I'm John Ray, and welcome back to The Price and Value Journey. I've just published my first book, The Generosity Mindset, and since that's happened, I've received a lot of questions from readers about the process of writing and publishing the book. In fact, the number one question I keep getting asked is, how long did it take to write the book? There's a lot of answers to that, and I'm not going to get into that right now. But I think most services providers who've had these questions have them for a good reason. They want to publish a book to help their business. They want the authority that comes from being seen as a published author in their area of expertise. Now, some have said to me that there's no way I could do this myself. I'm not a great writer. And my response is that you're probably a better writer than you think. But if you're insistent in that point of view, don't fret. There are excellent ghostwriters out there who can assist you in realizing your dream of having your own book. And today I'm delighted that we have one of the best in the business on our show today, Hal Clifford. Hal has been writing and editing for four decades. He has edited and developed multiple New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today bestsellers. He's also written three published nonfiction books under his own name, and I think he's got another one on the way. We'll hear more about that, Hal. But prior to forming Hal Clifford Associates, Hal was the editor-in-chief at Scribe Media, which is an independent publishing company. And he was also the executive editor at Orion Magazine, where he's had several awards for stories that he edited there. And during his tenure, Orion won the Utney General Excellence Award, and he's worked with some pretty well-known authors like Wendell Berry, Barry Lopez, Rebecca Solnit. So he's got some talented writers, as he says, both known and unknown, that he has worked with over the years. Hal writes that he is a great believer in the power of abundant thinking and the superpower of gratitude, and that laughter is one of the great currencies of abundance. Now, I was hooked on Hal when I first read these words. Hal Clifford, welcome to the Price and Value Journey.
Hi, John. It's really nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. So let's talk a little bit about your journey as a writer and why you veered into ghostwriting.
I appreciate that introduction very much. You've covered kind of the high points of my bio. And what happened during that process was about 15, 20 years ago now, I was working with some of those authors you mentioned in a magazine context, and not those particular individuals, but some other people like them had books in the works and asked me to help them edit them. So I started to slide into book editing unintentionally. Then I was doing more and more of that, and I landed that job at Scribe Media, and Scribe was a place that was really professionalizing what we're talking about here today, which is helping primarily people in business write really great books that are going to move the needle for them in ways that matter. And I've literally worked on hundreds and hundreds of books in that context, often in more of an executive editor role, supervising, but also actually writing a lot of these books or developing them myself. And I found in that process that I really love helping other people tell their stories. It's incredibly gratifying for me. And the way I think about it is I get to spend many hours of quality time with incredibly high performing and interesting individuals. It is like getting a master's degree in whatever their specialty is. And I'm a very curious person. I love to learn. It's just, I love going to work every day and doing this.
That's wonderful. So one of the other questions that I get, Hal, it has to do with just definitions. So there are a lot of terms out there: ghostwriter, editor, book coach, author coach. So maybe you can break this out for us. And then, of course, specifically as a ghostwriter, what your role is.
Sure. It is the Wild West to some degree these days in the self-publishing world, as you've had some experience with. Mm-hmm. So let me take those terms one at a time. So ghostwriter, and I'll talk about the way I think about it and the way I do it. So if I were to be your ghostwriter, John, I'm your intellectual partner in creating the book. And that means that I'm going to be responsible for writing the words. So you're principally talking to me and I'm likely recording it. And then from that material, I'm going to write text that sounds like you. I'm channeling you. So there's a little bit of black magic in there that I need to be able to capture your voice and bring that back to you. Your job is to have the wisdom, to have the knowledge, and to be able, and my job is to be able to interview in ways to get that out of you and to help you think. And this is a really important part of finding a good ghostwriter. A good ghostwriter isn't just someone who's transcribing what you say. That's a transcriptionist, and that's not what we do. Mm-hmm. What you're paying for with a ghostwriter is, as I said, an intellectual partner who's going to help you think. And we all need that. Good writing is a function of good thinking, and that's really what you're looking for. So that's the ghostwriting part. They are creating the manuscript on your behalf with your help. An editor, in the broadest terms, there are many subcategories of editing, but in the broadest terms, an editor is someone who's taking an existing manuscript and making it better. Again, there's a level of intellectual partnership if they're in what's called developmental editing, really helping you think about the structure and form and content of the book. But you've come to them with something already written. A book coach or an author coach, pretty much the same thing. And my company does all three of these services, by the way. But a book coach is someone who's helping you. You want to write the book yourself, but you need some guidance. Mm-hmm. So a good book coach is going to help you, again, think, help you structure the book, and then look over your shoulder while you're writing, maybe check on some of what you're doing and give you a little midstream guidance. But you're principally doing the writing with some guardrails that the coach has set up for you.
And if I'm a professional services thought leader, I want to realize my dream of having a book. How do I know which of these Wild West choices, as you put it, that I need to choose?
It's a good question. I would say you can figure it out by having a conversation with someone like me, and because that's the way I always start with people, like, where are you? What do you think you need? Let's talk about it. And I really try to be in service to everybody I talk to and sort of help them think that through. But there are some more mechanical ways to think about it, which is, do you enjoy writing? Are you a good writer? Do you like the discipline of it? Does it feel good to you to do that? Conversely, and this is where ghostwriters really can add a lot of value, you don't like doing it. It's hard to stick with it. You don't feel you're a good writer. You have trouble organizing your thoughts. And critically, you have to think about the opportunity cost. Most first-time writers, the number that I've seen, and it rings true for me, is if you're trying to write a book on your own, you're probably spending 300 to 500 hours on it. That's a lot of time. And you have to ask yourself, is that the best use of my time? For some people, it actually may be, but for many people, it's not. And that's where a ghost can really help you. They can knock that number down 90% probably.
So you talked about how the first step is a conversation. And I think a lot of people, this is like hiring a divorce attorney. And most people don't walk around with the divorce attorneys. That was a bad analogy. Sorry, Hal, but most people don't have a ghostwriter's magnet on their refrigerator and say, oh, I'll call Hal. They don't know what to ask, right? And they don't know who to ask. So how do I evaluate a ghostwriter that I'm looking to hire?
That's a great question. And in fact, like a divorce attorney, not a bad analogy, really. You may write one book in your life. Some people get the bug and they write multiple, but you may write only one. This can be a really big deal for you. And it's really important that you find someone that you want to work with and that you trust and that you like, ultimately. Mm-hmm. I really try to center the relationship. That's the most important thing. When I talk to people on a first call, I'm actually interviewing them as much as they're interviewing me. Like, we need to like each other. We need to have some sort of a vibe that clicks, because we're going to be doing this for a while. And my job will be to tell you truths that you may not want to hear all the time. You may have lovely writing and these stories that you think are great. And I have to tell you, like, no, like, this is not helping your book. This is not helping your reader. And so we have to have a relationship that's really going to allow that. So your question is, how do you figure that out early on? Mm-hmm. He also needs to just check their professional chops. So I'm a big fan of just talking to people, get on a Zoom call, get on a phone call, spend some time with them. You are really interviewing for a close collaborator and for trust. Beyond that, they should have a track record and that you should be able to investigate. So go read what they've written, ask them for some titles and talk to their clients. That's, of course, the most important thing. You want to, and ask the clients things like, what happened when it was difficult? Or it's not so much, did you like them? Did you work well? But what happened when things got hard? How did they handle that? I would also really look for just marks of professionalism. It's not hard to hang out a shingle and say, hey, I'm a ghostwriter. I'm an editor. A big red flag to watch for here is if someone wants to bill you for an initial call, don't, that is not cool. Do not do that. They should be willing to have some exploratory conversations and understand how important it is to understand you and your book before they're ever going to talk to you about money. And you'll see a fair bit of that. People who want to charge you $100 for to look at your manuscript or $500 or something. That's not a great sign. So those are a couple of things. And then I would say when they talk to you, there are often people who are really salesy in this business. That rubs me the wrong way. Personally, I have no problem with sales, but I'm very relationship-based in the way I think about this. And the other thing I would look out for, you will see I'm ranging a little bit here. Yep. You can redirect me, but you're going to see a really broad range in pricing. We're relatively expensive. There are lots of companies that are like way cheaper than us, but you got to think very carefully about who's doing the work. A lot of people are offshoring this to developing countries and not necessarily telling you things like that or they're trying to use AI to do some shortcuts. So dig a little bit and understand who you're working with, what their process is. I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they don't know, but there you go.
Yeah, but that's that last part there is interesting about offshoring and AI has entered into this process. I get the AI part, but I didn't realize ghostwriters were utilizing that in that way. That's interesting.
There's a lot of conversation in the business right now about how or whether to use AI. And here's my take on it. It's an interesting tool, particularly for ideation. It can help you if you're stuck on thinking of titles and subtitles and things like that. But at least for now, like AI can't get inside your head, right? AI can't tell your story. It can only find things that are on the internet and fix and organize them in some way. I would ask, these days, I would ask a ghostwriter, do you use AI? And if so, how do you use it? Because you want them telling your story and writing about what you know, what makes your book unique. And by definition, AI can't do that.
I'm of the opinion, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you're the expert, but I'm of the opinion that it's not just use of AI, it's how do you use AI, as you just said. If you're using it for, as you say, ideation, research, help, in my case, help with failing memory, that's perfectly appropriate. But if you're using it to compose and put on paper and release to the world, that's another matter.
Yeah, I would agree. Like I've used it for years for transcription. I think most transcription services now, you can get an AI version and it's 90% there, which is good enough because it's basically note taking.
Yeah.
But I would never use that for writing. And this actually brings up a good point. And this is something that you go back to your earlier question about clarifying terms. I always record and transcribe all my calls with authors, but I'm really clear that's not your book. Spoken language and written language are really different. So just at a fundamental level, if you read a transcript and you read a written page, they're very different. But more to the point, a conversation is very different than a book. And so you really want to watch out for people who that's essentially what they're doing, is that they're really just taking what you say and cleaning it up and putting it on the page. That's not good ghostwriting, and it's not going to serve you or your readers optimally, which is what you want, right? It's easy to make a bad book, right? And that's just incredibly disappointing to everybody involved. But the thing is to really pay attention to the details to make a good one.
Okay. So you said that you are interviewing potential clients as much as they're interviewing you. I would imagine that's true for all great ghostwriters that have great reputations and who are thinking about those hours they're going to have to spend on a project, because that's really what you're talking about. You're committing a big part of your life to this. So what are you looking for in a client that you work with? What are your red flags that you're looking for?
That's funny. The biggest one, honestly, is, are you a jerk? I'm not going to work. I think you and I are probably about the same age. Life is too short, right? We got to like each other.
Indeed.
Right? And they should be looking the same way at me. Yep. Absolutely. But beyond that, I think I want to know if they have something to say. Like, I do believe that everybody has a good book in them, maybe more than one. But is their idea baked? And is it like fully baked? And the thing is, it doesn't have to be fully baked, but I need to understand where you are, because how I'm going to help you depends on how far along you are in your thinking. And so a part of our process actually is, early on, is we go through an exercise where we really try to articulate, what is this book? Who is it for? What's it about? What does success look like for you? And often I say 20, 30% of the time, we come back to the author and the author realizes, this isn't quite gelled yet. I need to do some more thinking on it. And then we either do that together or they go off on their own and spend some more time. I'd say that's probably the most important thing, but it takes a little while. It takes a couple of calls sometimes to get a handle on that. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, I don't ask people to sign an agreement with me until we've gone through that process, because they may be premature for them. The other thing I would say is I'm really looking for enthusiasm. If I ask somebody, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to you to complete this book in, say, 10 months or a year? And they say, it's a 7. That's a red flag. Mm. Right? If it's anything under an 8, I'm concerned, because I can do a lot, but you've got to show up and you've got to do your part and you've got to do the thinking and you've got to hit your deadlines and all that stuff. And if you're pulled in many directions and this is one other thing that you're thinking you might try, it could end up frustrating for both of us.
Yeah, I want to talk about that process in a minute and what's required of the client of a ghostwriter in that process. I want to get to that in a second. But one more question about, I guess, qualifications for a ghostwriter. Does a ghostwriter have to be a subject matter expert or have some experience in the topic at hand?
I think that's actually a negative. If you are, I think it's better to not understand the topic, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I recently was talking to somebody. I helped them with a book on sales, and I didn't know much about sales when I was working with them. And as a consequence, they had to explain things to me. They would use terminology, or they would have a concept, and I'm like, hang on, like, back up, like, I don't understand this. And everybody does this. When we know a lot about something, we kind of skip over the tops of the waves in our head because we know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking to someone who also knows a lot about that thing, both of you will do that. And you'll end up with what I would call thin content. You haven't really delivered the meat that your target reader may need. Now, there can be cases where all your readers are sales executives and you don't need to explain certain things. But in this instance, like, they were talking to people getting into the business and so on. So having a relatively naive, and by that uninformed, ghostwriter who is going to ask you a lot of questions, you have to explain your thinking and you have to unpack your wisdom. And that really serves the reader. And I'll give you an example of this that I'm in right now. I can't tell you who this is because I have an NDA around it, but I'm working with one of the big 5 publishers and writing a memoir with a guy who is an international level competitor in his particular sport. And I know nothing about this sport. Mm-hmm. they all know that I'm really cold on this. And that's actually an advantage in that scenario.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's get into process. And you've decided to work together with a client. Let's unpack the process and how words get on paper. You talked about the interview process. Maybe we can cover that first. Address that. And one specific question on that, does that need to be in person, or is remote okay, given the advantages and disadvantages of remote versus in person?
I do almost all my work remotely. Most ghosts do. It's, as we all have learned in the last few years, it's incredibly efficient and, mm-hmm. and we can do really well. There are times when I will meet face-to-face with people, and it's always great when you can, mm-hmm. but it's a challenge often for both parties. And it's expensive too. And so sure. you want to try to minimize that if you don't need to do it. And we get it. We get some great books with people I've never met face-to-face. The process I'm going to describe, the one that our company uses, is very kind of white glove, high touch, relatively high-end product here. This is a significant investment of money. You're going to spend mid five figures to work with us and get a book. And we can talk about the business case for that in a minute if you want. But as a consequence, that also tends to focus the mind for a lot of authors, which is great. And here's what I ask of people. I think one way to think about it is, I recognize that you have a busy life as an author and you got a lot of other things going on. And a lot of what I'm trying to do is take the thinking of your book off your plate. But roughly once a week, I need you to focus with me. And then you can let it go and go do your other things and then come back and I'll obsess about it in between. And you come back and focus with me again. And so the cadence that I like to get into when we're into the meat of actually working on a book is roughly once a week. Usually 90 minutes for a Zoom call, try to do it the same time every week. And you need to show up ready to talk about your content. And we'll have a plan. You'll know, oh, we're talking about chapter one today. And I need to make sure I'm ready to share what I know here and so on. So we'll have built an outline and you'll have that in front of you and you'll know the things you're going to talk about. This is when we're in the meat. I'm jumping ahead a little bit. The outline building process is similar, but that's just more exploratory. So we'll have several phone calls where we're going to explore your book. And from that, we'll build the outline. And then we're going to go into this more structured interview gotcha. Series. So those, it depends on the length and complexity of the book. But let's say typically there's somewhere between 6 and 10 of those calls. 10 to 15 hours maybe of recorded material for the average business book is like 150 to 220 pages, somewhere in there. So that's, we'll talk about norms. So that's in the norm. So I'm going to be your trusted guide in this process and lead you through these interviews, slow you down, make you unpack things, interrupt you, get you to say more. We're in conversation. It's not just you spewing along, but I'm really trying to dig things out of you and also keep us on track as we go through this blueprint here. I call the blueprint the outline. I use a metaphor with people that building a book is like building a house. You start with a foundation, and that's like what I mentioned a few minutes ago. Who's it for? What's it about? What does success look like? Really core questions that we have to get right so we know mm-hmm. what we're doing. Then the blueprint is your plans, right? So that's your outline for the book. And then this process that I'm describing now is like framing it up, drying it in, getting the Tyvek on, getting the windows in. That's where we're getting all the content. So we're going to go through all those interviews. So it's usually a couple of months, 2 to 4 months, depending on how quickly you want to move. And then as a ghostwriter, I'm going to go off. I'm going to write you a sample. This is where my metaphor falls apart a little bit. But I'm going to write a few pages or a chapter where I'm going to channel your voice. I'm going to make this book sound the way I think you want it to sound. And I'm going to put that in front of you for guidance. And then we go back and forth where you help me, you coach me on sounding the way you want to sound on the page. Mm. That then gives me a template to write the rest of the book. And so I will then write the full draft and bring it back to you. Tyvek wrapped around it. The windows are in. The roof is dry. But we still have to get the wallpaper on and the tile and the paint and all of that. And mm-hmm. so that's then what we call the revisions process. And through that, you're now taking chunks of the book, reading through. I usually ask people to just mark it up. Use it to track changes function in Word and you mark it up. And some people like to actually write at that point, which is great. Love to have you do that. Some people just say, oh, I want to talk about this part. I want to talk about that part. Great. We'll get on the phone. We'll talk about it. I adapt my working style to what's going to work well for you. But that's taken in chunks. We go through the whole thing. I incorporate all of those changes. Usually we go through it again once more to make sure it's really good, really the way you want it. Then it goes to a copy editor, proofreader. At that point, we have a finished manuscript, and then we take it into production, design, and publication.
So a couple of, I guess, in the weeds questions on this. Do you take advantage of, let's say there's someone that's done a lot of public speaking or they've got blogs out there you can read. They've already got written work out there that you can check out. Do you take advantage of that in terms of trying to get their voice or not?
Ken, absolutely. Yeah. Those kinds of resources can be really helpful on a lot of fronts. Certainly, if they have a blog and have, then that's the style they want for how they write, that can be very helpful. Speaking or video classes, those are often places where we can find content. But it's unusual. I don't think we've ever had a situation where we would just take that content and use it. Like, we'll take that content and talk about it because that's, I want to get the author's contemporary thinking. I want to get the sort of latest way of seeing things. I think that's really important. And everybody's thinking, even about the things that we teach, it evolves and it grows. But yeah, that those can be really useful resources.
So you mentioned that you want to have a good rapport for when the hard times come, and they come. The hard moments, the rough spots. What are those rough spots in your experience?
That's a good question. Most people aren't smart enough to ask that question. Let me answer it in a slightly different way. I would say the thing that surprises most authors is they come to us and they think they're asking for technical help. I need to write a book. I don't have the technical skills to do the writing, the design, the publishing. I need someone to help me with that. And we provide that, absolutely. What they don't realize is that they're about to embark on a surprisingly emotional journey. And we know that. And so we're going to help you along that journey. I'm afraid I think of your divorce attorney again, because that's...
sorry for that.
It's actually quite useful. I think if you're calling a divorce attorney, you probably do know you're in for an emotional journey. But most people don't understand this. But if you're writing a good book, even what I call a knowledge share book, right? We're teaching something straightforward like sales. You're still putting yourself out there.
Right.
You are making yourself vulnerable in some way. And there is a part of our psyche that doesn't like that. And that can be scary. And that being scared shows up in interesting ways in different people. And I'm attuned to what that looks like. And I can help people through that. If you're writing a book that's a little bit more of a memoir, and we haven't talked about those, but a lot of our books are a blend of a business story and teaching, but also a story. Like, I built a business, I did something interesting. So there's a little more personal material, then it can really get scary. So that's something that often surprises people, and it usually comes later in the process. Like, they see the full manuscript and they realize, oh, this is going to happen. And so I just really try to stay attuned to that and help people realize what's happening and sort of be mindful, because they'll throw up all kinds of roadblocks, which can be interesting. More specifically, to answer your question, I would say there are a couple of hard points. Usually the one is, get the manuscript back. You get the first manuscript. And I tell people, expect the manuscript to be about 70% of the way done. And people get it. They're really excited to get it. And then they realize, oh, we still have work to do. And in fact, I'm going to have some homework here, because I can see and we've got to add a story here. We're going to have to say more about this. And so they realize, oh, we're not done yet. Because you have this great feeling when you finish those interviews and the ghostwriter's gone off in a corner for a month, and then they come back and you're all excited and you're like, oh, this is good, but we still have a ways to go. I'd say that's the big one. A variation on that is if someone comes, they've written their own manuscript and I'm working as an editor on it. This is really scary, because you've basically shown someone your baby. Like, you've worked really hard on this and you want me to tell you that your baby is gorgeous. And I'm going to come back and say, your baby's kind of homely and it needs some love. Right. And that's hard for people to hear, right? That's my job, right? My job is to help you put out the very best book you can put out.
Sure.
But I think it's even more acute in that editing scenario where people have to go, oh, this kid. Yeah, kid needs a bath.
No. Yeah, this kid needs more of a makeover than I think I could deliver here. I'm sure that thought may have crossed your mind on a few here and there. But
every book is its own challenge, and every project is unique.
And you mentioned something there that I think makes shivers run up the spine of some of our listeners, a lot of whom are, they either lean or they're raging introverts. And that's getting personal, right? So when you're writing a business, for lack of a better term, how-to book, talking about putting stories in there that may require more revelatory facts about the author than maybe they're comfortable sharing. But what I hear you saying is that makes the book richer when you do that.
Yes, that is true. Let me step back for a minute and clarify terms. So there are what I would call knowledge share books. Really think of it like a handbook, right? Mm-hmm. This is sales 101.
Yeah.
I'm going to teach you the first thing and second thing. Very straightforward. Might have some examples in it, but pretty dry in some ways. Imagine a spectrum. At the other end of the spectrum, you have really personal memoirs. Mm-hmm. And we've probably all read something like this. Someone telling often a very harrowing story of their life in really raw, gruesome detail. Most business books are not this. In the middle, along the middle, you get these business memoirs, which I love working on, by the way, because they are not always success stories, but often someone who's done something that they want to tell the story of what they've done. And that story is both a business story and a personal story. And in those situations, I find myself doing a lot of coaching with authors to help them connect with the readers. And the scary part here is you do that by making yourself vulnerable. Now, having said that, I don't force anybody to do anything ever. In this scenario, you're always the boss. You're always the decision maker. We are a fee-for-service company. You're going to, again, attorney-client, you're going to decide what it is you want to do. I'm going to give you my best thinking about why I think you should do something, but ultimately, you're going to make that choice. I'll give you an example. Literally, yesterday I was working on a book with an author where she's a whistleblower at a major international bank. And there are stories that she's told me that she does not want to, that I think are great, but she doesn't want to use them because they run the risk of impeding an investigation. Mm. Okay, totally legit. I hear you on that one. We're not going to go with that. Now, that's extreme, but a lot of them are more personal. I can't say this about my dad because he's still alive or stuff like that. And I always honor that, but I do try to surface those concerns and talk them through with authors. And I'm never going to make you do something you don't want to do. And just to stick with that point for a minute, a really important part of what I see my job as is for the author to understand that I've got your back. I think a lot of people, when they decide to do a book, there is a certain element of fear. It goes back to that idea of I'm putting myself out there and that's scary and I don't want to look stupid. Mm. And I will hurt your feelings before I let you publish a bad book. I will tell you the things you need to hear. You'll make the decisions, but I'm going to tell you why something is good or not good or smart or not smart to do. And I think that's comes back to this trust component of working with a good ghostwriter. Like you want someone who's going to do that for you.
Yeah. Wow. There's a ton of value in that that you get out of the fee you get paid for that right there alone. So that makes a lot of sense. So life happens. People get nervous and need some time maybe, but what are we talking about in terms of how long this takes start to finish? What should people plan for? And how do you hold your clients accountable to that timeline?
We could have a long conversation about that last question because I would love some advice. But to start with the first one, So I will always, when I put a proposal together, I'll put together a proposed timeline. But there's an important thing to bear in mind here, which is in our business model, you're in charge. You as the author are in charge. You may have a deadline. Like people may say, wow, I would love to have this book ready for this big conference that's coming up next year or something like that. Great. We would love to have a deadline to work against. But you may not. And if you don't, then you might drag your feet and there's not a whole lot I can do about that. So I'll come back to that accountability, but let's assume that you're not dragging your feet. You do have a deadline. You want to get it done. And again, sticking with norms, pretty straightforward business book, 150, 220 pages. Realistically, you're going to get your manuscript done in somewhere between 6 and 8 months if you're steady. And then the publishing, if you publish with us, so we do interior design, cover design. We set you up on Amazon and Ingram Spark. Ingram Spark is a website where wholesalers will get your book. We do all of that work for you and we get all that up and we allow for the Amazon timelines. That's about another 2 months. Realistically, you're looking at the better part of a year if you're timely. Now, we can move faster. We're working on a pretty complex manuscript right now that we're getting done in 6 months because we need to. It can be done. But I tend to remind people that there's usually an inverse correlation between speed and quality. And because this is a thinking process, this is a creative process, and we learn things as we go. We want to think about them, we want to come back, we want to fix things, we want to modify. At some point, you have to be done, but you also don't want to move so fast that you're creating something that's just shoddy or that you're going to be unhappy with. And then for accountability, I didn't answer that question.
Please.
So for accountability, it's funny. So I do know companies that ask you to pay it all up front. I also know people who've been really burned in that scenario. That's one kind of accountability. Wow, I've got a lot of skin in the game here. I need to get this done. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I actually am milestone payments. So as we have deliverables, you pay. I think that's much fairer to authors. It does put us in the back seat in terms of being able to hold you accountable because you don't feel like you're way out of pocket on anything. I just don't like to operate that way though. So really what I do is check in with people. We set schedules. We try to keep schedules if they slip, but I try to remind people like, this is the implication of this slipping, right? This is what happens if we don't stay on this particular schedule. And some people may be fine with that, and that's okay. If people go an extended period of time, then at some point if they come back, then we may have to renegotiate because their writer may not be available or we may be booked up or our rates may have changed. But that doesn't happen very often.
So, Hal, let's get to the bottom line. In terms of the why someone should write a book, particularly, and let's get into the stats in terms of how many copies are sold and the expectations people ought to have about the revenue they earn from the book versus the revenue they should expect because they're now a published author and recognized as an authority in their field because they're a published author. Let's get into that and how you talk through that with clients.
Yeah, John, I'm so glad you brought this up because this is arguably one of the most important things, if not the most important thing that authors think about. Sticking with the idea that these are business books for people who are writing them, I think this is your audience, people who are writing them for a business purpose, stay in that lane. You've got to think about this as a marketing investment, and it has to compete against your other marketing investments, and you want to see some kind of ROI. The ROI almost certainly is not in your book sales. Most, I think it was Seth Godin who said the riches are in the niches, right? So some of the very best business books I work on are super niche down, and they don't have big audiences by definition. I might be talking to oral surgeons. There's only a few thousand oral surgeons in the country, right? But if you're trying to get oral surgeons as clients for your consulting business, let's say, you might get one or two and more than recoup the cost of your book, depending on what you sell. So it's a really good fit for us when our authors are providing some kind of business service that's relatively mid-market or upper market. Relatively expensive. And you don't necessarily need to get a whole lot of clients to get a whole bunch of return. So that's one specific kind of return, right? This book is a form of lead generation that's going to be at the top of our funnel and bring us, you know, new clients. And I know plenty of people who have that success. And you don't, and as I said, you could sell 500 copies of your book and be incredibly successful on that front. So that's one for sure. Another one is a lot of people just want to try to differentiate themselves. If you're in a business like financial planning, there are a lot of financial planners out there, and you've got your system and you've got your way of doing things and how you relate to your clients, and you want to be noticed in the pack, this is a really nice tool to do that. And differentiation for sure. Speaking gigs. If you want to be the person who's invited to be on the panel or to give the keynote, you've got to be the person who wrote the book. It's when conference planners are putting their schedules together, that's one of the things they're looking for. That is coincidentally a nice way to get rid of some books too. People either give them away or sell them at where they speak. And that can be a way to move on some books if that's of interest to you. I think a little more amorphously is some authors are interested in leveling up their type of client. So they'll write not necessarily to the clients they have, but the clients they want to have. And they're signaling like, I can do this for you. And they're showing in a book, you give away your wisdom in a book and you really show who you are and what you can do. And it's an amazing calling card for people. So just opening the door to a lot of professional opportunities can be another ROI. These can be more or less squishy for people. They're sometimes hard to get a handle on when they're trying to figure this out. But that, I think, is a much more productive way to think about the business case than I need to sell 5,000 copies of my book in order to get my money back. Some people will sell plenty of copies. I heard from an author yesterday who a very specific book, his book is about emergency management. So think FEMA, that kind of stuff. And he's like deep in that bureaucracy. And so that's a very niche book. And his book was for other emergency managers. And there's some out there, but it's not a huge audience. He's had over $100,000 in income just from book sales, which he didn't expect. That wasn't why he did it. And mm-hmm. he was really very pleasantly surprised. And he only sold a couple thousand copies, 25 or 30 bucks a copy, whatever. It doesn't take very many to start to see some real revenue coming in.
Yeah.
So I'm rambling a little bit, but no. I think the important frame here is it's not about sales necessarily. It's about downstream effects.
And maybe you implied this in what you just said, but I would just add, if your prices as a published, after you've become a published author, haven't gone up for your services, we need to have a conversation. That's my little area. You ought to be able to raise your prices, period.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's funny. I appreciate that, John, because that's not something I actually talk to people about, but it is a really valid point.
If you have anybody that needs help on that or encouragement, send them my book. That one doesn't require a whole lot of time and trouble.
Actually, let me jump in there for a minute, because what you just said actually hits on a really interesting dynamic. You said, send them my book. And this is the thing. And some authors really have trouble getting their heads around this. Yes, I would send them your book, and 95% of them would read the book and you'd never even know it. Like, you might have seen the book sale, but that's it. And they should get real value from it. If you've written the book well, that book is really useful to them. And it's great. You've done a good thing, which is one of the nice things about being an author. It's like you do have the belief that you want to share what you know. You want to help people. And this is a great way to do that. But there are a few percent who are going to be pre-qualified and who want to work with you, and they're going to call you. Mm-hmm. And that's a lovely thing to have happen. If someone call you up, I read your book. You clearly know what you're talking about. I would love to work with you. That's a great day.
It sure is. And there's that. Yeah, that feels awfully good. And that feels a whole lot, in my mind, better than pulling it up on Amazon and just seeing it, because that's a nice thrill, but it's a bigger thrill when somebody wants to give you money because you wrote the book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Hal, this has been great. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to offer this wisdom. I think there are probably certainly a lot more questions I could ask, and I'm sure there are questions our audience has that they wish I had asked. So let's get to maybe the most important question is how folks can find you if they want to follow up and maybe ask those questions or potentially work with you.
Yeah, thanks, John. It can be found at halclifford.com, and that's Hal the computer and Clifford like the big red dog. So that's pretty straightforward. My company is called HCA Books, Hal Clifford Associate Books.com. Same thing. I think if you Google my name, I come up pretty easily. And I love to hear from folks, happy to talk to people about where they are and help them think about what might be useful for them. And sometimes I would just say, we'll sometimes point people some other direction. Like we might not be a good fit for them. They may not be ready. They may want something different. And I just try to be of service however I can.
Terrific. Hal Clifford, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you.
John, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Hey folks, as we wrap up here, a little more on my book. If you're interested, the book is called The Generosity Mindset: A Guide to Raising Your Confidence, Your Value, and Your Pricing. And here's the thing about that book. It's for solo and small professional services providers that need help with those issues around confidence and expressing your value, adopting a mindset of value, and pricing your services more effectively. It's available, as the old saying go, goes wherever fine books are sold. But if you want to know more, you can go to thegenerositymindset.com to find out more, or just email me directly, john@johnray.co. For my guest, Hal Clifford, I'm John Ray. Thank you for joining us on the Price and Value Journey.